Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome in to the Brad Sesmatt Show here on a Thursday. I am obviously not Brad Sesmatt. I am much shorter with more hair. I'm Greg Esposito. Glad to be here with you and plenty to talk about today. A big show coming up as we have the godfather of Arizona sports, Jerry Colangelo, who will join us at 10:20. Plus, Goody at the Movies, Bill Goody Kuntz, the chief film critic for AZ Central and Gannett, joins us at 10:50. But let's start off. It feels like it's been a lifetime since we've had NBA basketball, and in Phoenix it really has. It's been since April, but it's the NBA Finals back after a nine-day break because of the way the Eastern and Western Conference Finals played out. It's time for Cavs-Warriors Part 3, the trilogy, as some people are calling it. I don't know about that, but it is the third time these two teams will face off in the finals, and it got me wondering, is this actually a good thing for the NBA? And I'll ask Jerry Colangelo his opinion on that coming up later. But for me, I just feel like it's not a good thing for the NBA in the fact that there's no drama, in particular in this playoffs. The fewest games played in the playoffs before the finals in two decades, if I remember correctly. It's not good for the fans. When it's a foregone conclusion from day one of the season that you're going to get the Cavs and the Warriors, or any two teams for that matter, in the finals, there's no drama. And if there's no drama, sports aren't worth watching. Sports are basically, they're basically soap operas for men. That's the way it is. There's storylines there that you follow. There's the ups and downs. And ultimately, if you know what the conclusion is going to be, the story's not that interesting. Now, it's not a foregone conclusion who will win between the Warriors and the Cavs. There's people on either end of it, and I'll talk about my thoughts here in a second. But I'm sorry, when you know that this is the way it's going to end up, why watch some of this? Now, you're going to get great moments like, say, a Devin Booker scoring 70 points and setting a franchise record for a team, and you're going to get some fun moments in the playoffs like Manu Ginobili blocking James Harden on a game-winning shot. But really, there was nothing that made this playoffs intriguing until this moment. And if the NBA Finals wind up being a sweep for either one of these teams or very little drama, it's going to have been one of the most boring NBA seasons in recent memory, which is bad for the league because when you look at it and the competitive landscape, we're likely headed for a fourth matchup between these two teams if there's no major injuries on either of the rosters. I mean, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion Kevin Durant is going to wind up back in Golden State, win or lose. There's no way that he could pack up and move somewhere else after leaving OKC to come to Golden State. So now you're looking at likely a fourth straight time with these teams. You've taken the drama out again. This has to be and has to go down as one of the best NBA finals in history for the NBA to feel like this was a successful season. And to me, the only way you're going to get that is another seven-game series, and I really feel like LeBron has to win. We've come full circle. We've seen LeBron be the great hometown guy, kid, trying to win it all with a ragtag bunch that weren't good enough to get it done. We've seen LeBron be the villain when he went to Miami and the decision. And now we've come full circle where LeBron is the good guy again. LeBron's the kind of guy that you're rooting for because somehow the Warriors went from the likable team to the villains with Kevin Durant deciding to join up with them. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, but there's a lot on the line for the NBA. If they do not have an all-time great finals, this is going to be a disappointment of a season. What do you feel, E? I gotta toss to my buddy E behind the glass here. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I'm looking finals? Like you said, I'm looking forward to actually watching basketball. I mean, yes. To think that there've been two Stanley Cup games before the NBA Finals have even played game one is ridiculous. But
and the one storyline you remember from those Stanley Cup Finals is the fact that some guy threw a dead catfish on the ice.
And the backstory of the whole getting the catfish, I don't know if you heard it, but it's insane. Too long for us to go into, but someone had just way too much money and way too much time on their hands. But anyway, back to the NBA Finals. I'm looking forward to it. I'm just wondering, because you know far more about the NBA game than I do, I wonder, are people sort of comparing Cavs, Warriors, modern day to Lakers, Celtics of the 80s? Because those two teams played in the finals all the time. Those two teams hated each other. Mm-hmm. Those two teams were loaded with megastars. The NBA, from a visibility standpoint, isn't anything like it is today. The game has changed. The game has evolved. Or are we to the point now where are we burned out on Steph Curry? Are we burned out on LeBron? Do we want some fresh faces and new blood in there?
No, you always want to see greatness. And I'm not against the two best teams facing off. It's how we got here that's the troubling
and
thing
to clear,
me.
And they're clearly the two best teams. If anything, the playoffs prove that the Warriors and the Cavs are the elite of their conferences.
If LeBron doesn't get sick in Game 3, I think it was, of the Eastern Conference Finals, we're looking at two teams with perfect records, 12-0, going into the series. That's where the problem lies. And you never saw that when it came to Celtics-Lakers. You always had competitive series leading into it.
Yep.
There was always drama whether it was Houston in the West or there were different teams, Philly in the East. There were teams that competed with the Celtics and the Lakers, and it wasn't a foregone conclusion. This year
was bad.
There was no competition.
No, it was bad.
There was nobody that even came close. And
there was no drama. Much like the NFL playoffs last year. Just a lot of chalk, not really competitive close games. That's kind of what we saw in the NBA playoffs as well.
But then it paid off in spades in the Super Bowl.
Absolutely did. No question.
With one of the greatest comebacks in the history of all sports. If we don't get that in the NBA now, it's going to have been, to me, a waste of a season.
Well, and I want to think, Espo, we're going to see that crescendo, and it is going to go six or seven games, but I don't know. I mean,
I have a sneaking suspicion the Warriors wind up sweeping this series.
Sweeping?
I'm not making that prediction. I'd love to see the Cavs win again. There's absolutely no pressure on LeBron James.
Nope.
For the first time in forever. He broke Cleveland's curse. He's beloved now. People are rooting for him across the league. So there's no pressure on him. So this is probably the best situation he's entered the finals in ever. So if there were ever a time that he'd come in, he'd have a huge series and he'd help his team win it, it's this one. But the Warriors, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, although Klay hasn't played very well these playoffs, he may wind up being the Harrison Barnes of this year, and Draymond Green, I don't know. I don't see how you get over the hump. And if you look at it, the first time they faced off, the Warriors dominated. Last year, it came down to Steph was a little injured. You had Draymond basically losing his mind in the finals, and it had to, and that's how the Cavs had to win. You're going to have some weird things happen again for Cleveland to win. I actually want to get to another story that we spent a lot of time focusing on, NBA Finals. We'll talk a little bit more about it with Jerry Colangelo in the next segment. But there was a bizarre story that came out over the last 24 hours. Mr. Met has been fired.
What?
Mr. Met has been fired.
That Mr. Met with the gigantic baseball head?
That Mr. Met. Now, I assume there'll be another Mr. Met. I assume it was just the guy in the costume that got fired. Sorry if I just broke it to you that mascots are guys in costumes. I apologize. I did not mean to do that.
D-Baxter is not a real bobcat?
No. I don't think that would be safe to let a real bobcat go in a stadium. But no, so Mr. Met has been fired for what they're deeming an obscene gesture.
What?
There's a Twitter video where Mr. Met flips off. I'm using air quotes.
Yeah, there you go.
Flips off.
Oh, there it is.
Come on. Okay, let me say this. Mr. Met has four fingers. How? There's no middle finger. How do you flip somebody off?
That's a good question.
There is literally no middle finger when you only have four fingers.
Like the Mets don't have enough issues as an organization between Matt Harvey and everything else that's going on around that baseball team.
It's New York. That's a sign of endearment.
It really is.
I mean,
say goodbye to one another.
Yeah, if you're not getting flipped off in New York, you're not doing something right. And Mets fans have been giving the team the finger a lot this year. So Mr. Met was just returning the favor. I think we need to get this guy his job back. Two reasons. Like I said, you can't have a middle finger if you only have four fingers, and it's New York, people. Why are we holding Mr. Met to a higher standard than we hold the millions of residents in New York and the fans of the Mets? I have absolutely no problem with this. And you know, this is one of those things a decade ago. Would have been a fun story. Everybody that was in that section told their friends and family that Mr. Met flipped me off, you know, and that would have been it. But now that we have Twitter and video that gets out, a guy loses his job for obviously an error in judgment. But, you know, it's an interesting story, a unique story, and one of the fun things we have going on in sports. We've got plenty more coming up on the show. Next segment is Jerry Colangelo. So stick with us here on the Brad Sessmatt Show. Welcome back into the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Greg Esposito filling in for Brad today. Excited to have you along with us and very excited for our next guest. He is the managing director of USA Basketball and the godfather of Arizona sports, the one and only Jerry Colangelo. Mr. Colangelo, thanks for taking a few minutes with us today.
My pleasure, Greg. How are you? You're doing well today.
I'm doing very well. Game one of the NBA Finals. You can't be doing bad when there's finally basketball back on. And the third time the Warriors and the Cavs are going to face off in the finals. Do you feel this is good for basketball, or do you think it's kind of lost some of the drama having the same teams 3 years in a row?
Well, first of all, it's an accomplishment to have these two teams accomplish what they did. So I think our hats should be off to both Cleveland and to Golden State. They are the two best teams in basketball today. They deserve to be playing in the finals. And it's a great matchup, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how it plays out.
Is there a little bit of pride for you in seeing a guy in David Griffin who worked his way up through the Suns organization now manning the Cavs as general manager?
Well, we're proud of Griff's work in Cleveland. You know, it's a great story. A kid from the west side of Phoenix who worked his way up in the Suns organization and looking for opportunities. He's been able to build a career and end up with one of the top franchises in basketball, and he's done an outstanding job.
When you look at it from a perspective of USA Basketball, you see so many of the stars that you have on the USA team playing in these finals. Is it tough for you because you've got guys that you know really well? You can't really take a side in this, can you?
Well, you know, in my role anyway, it's best. I don't have favorite teams. You know, I am pulling for individuals because of the personal relationships that have developed over the years. So I kind of feel I have a vested interest in each and every one of the guys who have been part of USA Basketball. And I think to a man, they all would say to you that the experience with USA Basketball has really helped them in their careers overall, and it was a great experience in each and every case.
Well, one of the guys you've had a chance to get to know while running USA Basketball is LeBron James. And you obviously had a chance to get to know Michael Jordan while you were running the Suns. Do you think it's fair when people are trying to compare these two and debate their greatness?
No, I think just the mere fact that people have now settled in very comfortably to acknowledge that those two players are the best players ever. And so once you get that far, I don't think it matters who's one and who's two. With all the great, great players that have played in the NBA, and I could list 10 to 12 players who I consider to be in the top five. That's the way it really is. And so I think it's a real tribute to both of them.
Let's shift gears and look at GCU with the program now being able to be postseason eligible going into this next year. How do you feel that Dan Marley's done with that program, and what do you see for the future of GCU basketball?
Well, first of all, Dan Marley has done an incredible job. He's building a very, very solid program, kind of brick by brick, and each year the recruiting gets better. The quality of players that we are bringing in, and you know, now that we've paid our dues in terms of the 4 years before we could become eligible for postseason play, I think we're ready for that. You know, we have a game plan. We know exactly what we need to do. We are still in the WAC conference. If we win the WAC conference, and that's our goal and objective, we are automatically in. And so that's the job ahead of us. And we know who our competition is on paper. And we feel good about the recruits that we have this year. And, of course, that's only on paper. You know, you still have to go out and prove yourself. But the growth of the program is one of the great success stories ever in the NCAA in terms of just the past 4 years. And so there's a lot to be proud of, but there's a lot of work ahead of us, and the program is in great hands with Coach Marley and the staff he's put together. So it's an exciting time for GCU.
Well, you bring up the WAC conference. It's obvious that GCU has high aspirations and not going to just settle for being good enough to get in the tournament, that they want to actually compete on the big stage. Can you do that in the WAC conference, or at some point does the program and all GCU sports grow beyond that kind of a conference and do you have to look elsewhere?
Well, I think the real key to that question and therefore the answer is that the NCAA is going through not turmoil necessarily, but a lot of change. Mm-hmm. There's going to be shakeout. There's going to be schools leaving conferences and joining other conferences. Once the power conferences were put in place, primarily for football, it's kind of changed the mix. So the mid-majors are scrambling to try and determine what their future holds. And therefore, I would foresee over the next 4 or 5 years a lot of schools making changes and maybe a new conference developing, but certainly a lot of change.
All right. Well, let's take a step back and look into the past here, as we're about almost exactly 25 years to the day when you and Cotton Fitzsimmons in the Suns front office pulled off one of what I think is the greatest trades in Arizona sports history when you acquired Charles Barkley. How did that all come about, and what do you remember about that trade specifically?
Well, I think you need to look at the few years preceding the trade, that we had excellent teams. We were winning, you know, 50-55 games. We were a little frustrated because we couldn't get over the hump. and therefore, you know, we said, here's an opportunity. It's going to cost us. It might be considered risky by some, but it certainly on paper appeared to be an opportunity to get us over the hump. And so when the trade was made with Philadelphia, you know, Jeff Hornacek was the key player that was involved in that deal, and we hated to lose Jeff. Jeff was, you know, one of our favorite players in terms of the fans, and he was a great success story being drafted as the last pick of the second round and earning himself eventually, you know, all-league performance and all-star performance. So it was a great story, but something that we felt badly about. We bring Charles in. Of course, when we opened the arena, the 92-93 season, we were sold out for the year before we played our first game. We had a new coach in Paul Westphal. We had a superstar in Charles Barkley. And the year turned out to be one of those, you know, premier kind of a seasons. We led the league in winning percentage from day one to finish. We were big favorites, a one seed in the playoffs playing against L.A., number 8. They beat us in the first two games in Phoenix, and it was a best of 5. And we had to go to L.A. and win those two and come back and win game 5. It was quite a series. Of course, it ended up with us playing the Bulls for the championship, and we lost in 6. In Phoenix, and I still can see and dream about Paxton's shot coming off the pick that was the difference maker.
Have you forgiven Danny Ainge yet for not rotating on defense on that play?
Well, you have to forgive. You can't forget, but you can forgive.
When you look back on that trade, do you remember any hesitation in acquiring Charles because of the off-court issues? I went back and was reading a piece from the New York Times that was actually written the day after the trade, and they made a huge deal about Charles's off-the-court issues, that it could have been a problem for Phoenix. But do you remember that being any even consideration in the deal?
Of course, we thought about all of the pluses and minuses, and after a lot of due diligence, we concluded that we were willing to do exactly what we did. Otherwise, we wouldn't have.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's all part of a process in making a deal in professional sports.
It is one of the toughest. You brought up parting with Jeff Hornacek, but it was one of the toughest things, when whether you were a general manager or a managing partner with a team, parting ways with a player in terms of a trade. How difficult is that to make that kind of a decision with a guy?
Well, there's no question that the toughest part of my position in the various roles that I've played is dealing with an individual player and either cutting a player or trading a player, waiving a player. It's personal. It's really personal. You develop relationships with each and every one of them, and it's tough. It's tough on the individual. It's tough on families if they have families, and yet it's part of the business. You know, athletes are well paid. Part of being a professional athlete is knowing that you may not spend your entire career in one city. That chances are you're going to make two or three stops along the way, if you're fortunate, if you have that kind of an extensive career. But it's very, very difficult for us. If you have any feelings whatsoever, it's hard.
All right. When you look back on your time with the Suns, is there any regrets, anything that you wish you could have done differently in the time in managing the team?
No, I'm very proud of what we were able to do in terms of building a very solid franchise. You know, we had a model franchise for decades with the Suns. People really tried to follow so many things that we initiated. And, you know, during the term from 1968 until 2004, when I sold the Suns, which was a very difficult parting of the ways for me. You know, we had the fourth best record in the history of the NBA. We didn't win a championship. I thought we should have won two or three times. It wasn't in the cards for it to happen. And so that's a disappointment for me, that we weren't able to do it. And of course, the irony for me is that in starting the Diamondbacks baseball team, we won a World Series in our fourth year. And believe me, that wasn't lost on me while it was happening that night back in 2001.
Is it hard to believe that it's 50 years ago, this is the 50th season for the Phoenix Suns, and looking back on your decision to leave Chicago and come to the Valley?
No, you know, when I put my young family and my wife and myself on a plane back in 68, and we left to start a whole new life, not knowing what the future would hold, but we never looked back. It was an exciting time. The city was so responsive to us starting a franchise, and it was a wonderful, wonderful journey for all the people who were involved. And I'll forever be grateful for the great support our fans and the community gave us.
Oh, Mr. Colangelo, thank you so much for your time today. It was an honor and a pleasure, and we hope to talk to you soon.
All right, you take care, Greg. Bye-bye.
Welcome back into the Brad Sesmatch Show. I'm Greg Esposito. The trailer to Brad Sesmatch's feature-length film. I'm the more action-packed but shorter version here. Glad to have you with us on a Thursday here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Great to have the Godfather, Jerry Colangelo, on the program last segment. And now we're going to shift gears to something a little less upbeat and interesting, but actually depressing when you look at it. It's actually the video footage of Tiger Woods' DUI, and you know, we'll pull it up here in a second, but I'm still not sure exactly what happened in this situation, and it's really sad to see a guy that was once at the peak of everything fall so hard and so fast. And let's take a look at that DUI video.
All right, go ahead and spread your feet for me. Do you have anything on you that's going to poke me, prick me, stick me, or cut me?
All right, I need your right foot in front of your left foot. Right now your right foot is behind your left foot, okay? All right, nope, put your right foot in front of your left foot.
Right foot in front.
Yep. You're going to touch the tip of your finger to the tip of your nose and go directly back down, okay? Right, left, so on and so forth, okay? And until we're done, okay? Do you understand the instructions? Okay. Go ahead and close your eyes and tilt your head back. Keep your feet together, okay? All right, tilt your head backwards, please. All right, left. Do you remember the instructions to touch the tip of your nose and then put your hand directly back down by its side?
No.
And I want you to say the alphabet from A to Z in a slow, non-rhythmic manner. Okay, meaning you're not going to sing it, okay? Do you understand the instructions?
No.
Okay, what were the instructions?
I'll repeat A to Z, non-rhythmic, lettering between A to Z, make sure you get everyone correct and what you do, okay?
Okay, and make sure you don't sing it, okay? Just say it.
Yeah.
Okay? All right, go ahead and put your arms out by your side. Your arms down by your side. Go ahead and touch the side of your shorts. Okay, what I want you to do is close your eyes and tilt your head backwards, okay? And then go ahead and begin when you're ready.
Man, what?
Now, before I continue, let's make this very clear. There's absolutely nothing funny about DUIs and about anybody that would get behind the wheel while impaired and endangering other people, all right? I in no way think that's funny, but I'm sure Nike is not very happy at the fact that Tiger is in complete Nike gear in this video. This is probably the most exposure Nike's gotten tied to Tiger in the last, 8 years, 10 years? And it happens to be in this video. So I'm sure they're very, very pleased that he was wearing all their stuff. But man, you watch that, and it is just sad to see. I mean, this is Tiger Woods, a Stanford-educated guy, a guy that, you know, was America and the world's sweetheart at one time in the late 90s and early 2000s. And we all know what happened with his wife and the cheating and everything there. And that's one thing. But this is a completely different thing. It's depressing to see that. And it's disturbing that, you know, we assume based on his statement and based on the fact that he had a 0.0 blood alcohol level, that it wasn't alcohol and that it was prescription medication. But just the fact that he would get behind the wheel is just disturbing to me. And it brings up another topic, and I want to talk to you about this, E. The fact that we are so quick to want to tear down stars in America, and I think Tiger's fall is part of that. We're obsessed with watching these guys fail, but then there's always the comeback story too that we seem to be suckers for as well. I'm not sure Tiger's ever going to get that comeback chapter.
I don't think he's ever going to get it. And it's with these mega stars, like you said, Espo, we go through the different range of emotions. Like when Tiger was at the peak of his golf career, he was envied, he was loved, he was hated, he was respected. And then after the sex scandal and all the dirty laundry got revealed, he was almost felt sorry for.
Yeah.
People were embarrassed by him. And then we've seen his back injuries over the last few years. Now he just hasn't been able to get right on the golf course. And then it's more sympathy.
Yeah.
And then this latest incident, I mean, what I didn't show at the beginning was the police asked him where he was, and he said he was in Los Angeles when he was pulled over in Jupiter, Florida.
Yeah.
They asked him where he was going. He said he's going to Hollywood or going down the beach or something.
Yeah.
I mean, he just completely, and like you said, why are you behind the wheel of a car? Oh. And I've been impaired. You've been impaired. Mm-hmm. When you have too much to drink or when you have something in your system that is on overload, it does affect your decisions, but you just have to think, like, you're Tiger Woods. I mean, just please, just try to stay out of the spotlight for once.
Well, and we're in a world now that you're one tap of a button away from a car showing up wherever you are. It's not difficult anymore to avoid these situations. And I never understood it with athletes and rich people, how they'd get in this, because they could afford drivers, they could afford all this. But now anybody can with the touch of a button. The fact that Tiger or any of these people still make these poor decisions is ridiculous to me. But then you're looking at Tiger. I don't even know how you could have a comeback at this point. Would it be a second act, as you know, in media? I don't see Tiger being a media guy. He doesn't seem to like particularly being interviewed. He doesn't seem to want to talk about any of the stuff that's gone on with him over the years. I don't know what you could even hope for in a comeback story.
I will say this, though. If Alex Rodriguez can go be an MLB analyst, Tiger Woods, if he wants to, can go be a PGA analyst.
Oh, he could, and there'd be networks lined up around the block to have Tiger Woods be part of their team.
Sure.
And just for the exclusive first interview talking about his post-career and everything, but doesn't eventually just the sideshow act of it all wear off, and then I don't see Tiger being a compelling watch on television.
I don't think the PGA, I think the PGA is sort of past Tiger.
Yeah.
Because they have enough young stars, none with the draw that Tiger ever brought in terms of just bringing the casual golf fan into TV sets and attending golf events and things like that. But there is enough marketability between Ricky Fowler and some of the other guys, the younger generation of stars, that golf is fine without Tiger. Yeah, golf would be a lot better with a healthy, functioning, winning Tiger Woods. But I don't think, like you said, that we'll ever see that day.
No, and I always felt that the fall of Tiger Woods was inevitable because he never really fit the old school crowd with golf and what people wanted from their golfer. He brought in a different, it was a Happy Gilmore-esque kind of crowd that he brought in, that casual golf fan that didn't want to politely clap, they wanted to cheer and all these different things. So I felt it was inevitable, and that's why I don't feel like they're going to at any point embrace Tiger to bring him back. If there is a comeback story for Tiger Woods, I think it's going to have to be in business somehow and coming up with some kind of venture that he can do that way. I don't see it. It's sad, and it fits right in with our obsession of watching these athletes fail. And it makes me wonder too, and we talked a little bit to Jerry Colangelo about Charles Barkley and some of the pitfalls that he had. How would Charles's career played out in the current era that we live in? 24-hour news cycle for sports, which they didn't really have.
Social media everywhere.
So everybody, every single human being.
Cameras on smartphones everywhere.
Everybody's a reporter at that point. Every little thing he did would have been scrutinized by a million talking heads on six networks, which is ironic. I'm sitting here staring at a camera talking about sports, complaining about talking heads. But you get what I mean. Every detail is scrutinized. I don't think Charles makes it through his career and is looked at the way he is now. If he grew up if he played in this kind of era, I could have seen a Tiger kind of downfall for him if we had the kind of coverage we have now.
And when you talk about guys like Barkley and Tiger, they're such polarizing public figures. Yep. I mean, Tiger Woods was busted for this, whatever it was, DUI, however they want to phrase it, back on Monday, I think, Sunday night, Monday morning. It is now Thursday. And as new developments keep coming along, Tiger Woods keeps making his way back into the news cycle.
My question is, why do we care? Like, to me, why do we care? Why do we continue to talk about it Tiger Woods is a messed up individual. He needs help right now. I mean, that's the bottom line of it. And we went through this. I remember sitting here, I think it was last summer, talking about Johnny Manziel and his dad around this exact time last year, I think. And I just, at some point, we have to stop caring about these individuals and stop talking about this. Because I think somewhat they're addicted to fame. I was listening to a podcast with Conan O'Brien, the host of Conan on TBS, the former late night host for NBC, and he said celebrity is a lot like going to space and coming back and being affected by gravity. Like, you don't know how to interact. You're basically, it changes you so dramatically that it changes who you are. And I think guys like Tiger Woods are dealing with that. And I think at some point we just need to ignore what's going on with them, and they need to get help. So that's my stance on Tiger Woods. We're going to go from talking about a guy down on his luck to a wonderful woman. We're going to talk Wonder Woman with AZ Central and Gannett chief film critic Bill Goodykoontz next here on the Brad Sessmatt Show. Welcome back into the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Greg Esposito filling in for Brad, and it is always a favorite of mine when I get to fill in on a Thursday and talk with AZ Central and Gannett chief film and media critic Bill Goodykoontz. Bill, how are you today, man?
I am pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing well, and I'm excited because I am a huge DC fan. I've been disappointed by the performance of Batman v Superman and Suicide Squad. Am I finally going to get a good DC superhero movie with Wonder Woman this weekend?
You are.
Yay, finally.
It's quite good, and there's no way, I mean, there's no great way to say this without sounding like a bit of a jerk, but it's a really good movie. It is not a great movie. A lot of people are saying it's great because of what it is. And I mean, clearly, two things. We've long since needed a female superhero.
Yep.
I mean, there just hasn't been one. I mean, you could say Catwoman or whatever, but you know, but that was so bad it didn't really count.
Yeah, I don't think anybody should count that as a film in general. It was bad.
Yeah. But not just that. But as you say, that like, and I, for the life of me, I will never. I was a DC kid myself. But, you know, if Marvel had a good comic, I would read that, too. I've never understood the rivalry in the movies. But there's no question that Marvel's had a lot more success and a lot better movies.
Yeah.
But this is a good one. And this will stand up with any... It's really good. It could have been great. But at the end, it just kind of falls into that generic giant battle that all of these movies do.
You mean like Batman v Superman, where they destroy half the city in a 30-minute span there? Yeah.
Yes, in this case, they destroy a World War One airfield. I think the one thing after the Superman movie, they have gotten away from destroying populated areas.
Yeah. I think they got the message loud and clear after that film, for sure.
Absolutely.
So when you look at this and you say, good movie, not great, are we grading that on the scale of superhero films, just basing it versus the other DC movies and Marvel? Or are we talking film in general, it's a good movie?
I'm talking film in general.
Okay.
Which is how I try to do all of them that way.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that maybe there are certain concessions that you make. You know, it's not going to have quite the depth. But, you know, some of those Captain America movies, I mean, they've got a real story going on there.
Yeah.
And the first Avengers, while, you know, it was a lot of fun, it was, you know, it wasn't a bad movie. The first Guardians of the Galaxy, I mean, I thought that was a terrific movie. Not just a good superhero movie, a good movie.
Yeah. So well worth the money if you're looking for a film this weekend, Wonder Woman, in your opinion.
Well worth your $11 or whatever it is now.
Good. Now, another film that I know you had a chance to see and you talked with star Dimitri Martin is Dean. Now, watching the trailers, I admittedly haven't seen the movie. It seemed very much like a Garden State kind of film. Is that a fair assessment?
Me and everybody else who has ever said and seen the frame of this thing, including you now, and has written about it or talked about it, is going to mention Garden State because it's just too much. It's not too much, but the same way that Zach Braff wrote, directed, and starred in Garden State, a movie about going home after his mother dies and his life being sort of stuck. This is a movie where Dimitri Martin wrote, direct, stars, goes home, or is actually at home, and is stuck after his mother dies. There are some good things about Garden State. Some people really love it. Some people really hated it. I thought that if nothing else, it introduced the world to the Shins. So that's a change your life, man, as Natalie Portman says. In this movie, of course, also has the acoustic music but it also has Kevin Kline and Mary Steenburgen. They're terrific. It has a Gillian Martin. I think she's really good. She's been good in a couple things, yeah. And I think that she does a really nice job. I liked it fine, but I have to say that I am given to liking these kind of movies, maybe more than most. I don't mind that not a lot happens, and sometimes it's self-consciously quirky, as these movies are, but if I think there's a payoff, you know, if you really actually care about the characters. So.
Yeah, I love Gillian Jacobs. I can never pronounce her name, but it went from both Love and when she was in Community, too. So good to hear that she stands out in this film. But I always wonder, what are these young comedians and actors that are marginally good-looking, why are they always so depressed in these kind of films? They always seem like they're searching for some kind of meaning. I'm like, you got it. You're in movies. You're making money. And you get to do what you like. Like, they always seem to be searching for something. So,
well, there can only be one Seinfeld.
This is true.
Martin, I've talked to him, and he talked a little about that a little bit. He said to me, this is like the bonus round. He said, I wanted to be a stand-up comedian. I've been a stand-up comedian for 20 years. He said, you know, I had no intention. I didn't care if I acted or not. He said, along the way, I got some chances, and I got interested in it. And he said, but that was not my goal. So he said, this is just like gravy, you know.
Do you think this is a role that actually will lead to more for him in terms of that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's kind of playing himself. If you like his comedy, you'll certainly like the movie. Certainly if he writes and directs another movie, it will. but he shows up and stuff from time to time. And he admitted himself. He said, look, I'm not much of an actor. He said, I have a very limited range. And he said, you know, I'm not going to play the quarterback, and I am not going to play, you know, like a spy. He said, I'm kind of going to be me. But he said that's also kind of freeing because he knows, you know, what he needs to do, what he can do.
All right, and then I know I got to ask you. We were talking about Tiger Woods the last segment, and I want to get your perspective from a media standpoint. At what point do you feel media in general has to just kind of stop covering this stuff? We're 4 days into talking about Tiger Woods having a DUI. Is that, in your opinion, is that a healthy thing for media?
4 days in probably is not. It kind of signals, you know, and I would suggest to you that when the finals start tonight, that will not be talked about as much.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, partly it's a time of year, partly it's Tiger Woods. I mean, I loved when Tiger Woods was winning majors. You know, I was working in sports also at the time. It was certainly great for us. It was great for everybody. And some people that thought, no, he wins too much, he's too dominant. I like seeing people do stuff that hasn't been done before. Mm-hmm. And he was doing that. And he is, I mean, I saw Jack Nicklaus when I was a kid, but I didn't really know what was going on. But Tiger Woods is the greatest golfer of my generation by far. And he was also the most dominant athlete, I think, of my generation, including Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, you know, I think that you get kind of a, for better and for worse, you continue to get attention for that, even after your star fades.
Well, that's true. Well, Bill, always appreciate your time here on the Brad Sessmatch Show. We'll make sure to get out the movies, and you make sure to check out Bill's reviews on AZ Central. He does a fantastic job. Always enjoy. Bill, have a great weekend.
Thanks so much.
And that puts a wrap on this edition of the Brad Sessmatch Show for a Thursday. Brad will be back next week, but I always enjoy being here with you. So thank you so much for your time. And thank you to Jerry Colangelo and Bill Goody-Coons for joining us on the program. And we'll talk to you next week here on the Brad Sessmatch Show.